I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the
As a founding member of the Beach Boys, Mike Love has spent an extraordinary 55 years and counting as the group's lead singer and one of its principal lyricists. The Beach Boys, from their California roots to their international fame, are a unique American story, one of overnight success and age-defying longevity, of musical genius and reckless self-destruction, of spirituality, betrayal, forgiveness. And Mike Love is the only band member to be part of it each and every step. Love's story has never been fully told of how a sheet metal apprentice became the quintessential frontman for America's most successful rock band, singing in more than 5,600 concerts in 26 countries. He writes about it all in his new memoir, Good Vibrations, My Life as a Beach Boy, and it is a great honor to welcome Mike Love to the roundtable this morning. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
A delight to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us. And I want to talk about the book because it's amazing. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. Let me first, though, get the big music news out of the way, which is Bob Dylan won a Nobel Prize for Literature. What do you make of that?
I think it's fantastic. It's wonderful that the Nobel Prize is considered, something like pop literature and music, and certainly Bob Dylan is one of the more iconic writers of the last century. So, I think it's a wonderful thing.
You write about Dylan in the book. He was a fan of your music and felt that with what he was doing, you and your music often fit into that goal.
Well, I went to an event one time. It was in New York, and it was a very ultra liberal peace kind of gathering, and Bob Dylan said, well, you should go out and do California Girls. I said, are you kidding? He said, no, they'll love it. And they actually encouraged me to go out, and I did it, and it was really neat. So that was one thing that sticks out in my memory is Bob Dylan, obviously at the forefront of all the, efforts to create, eliminate our involvement with Vietnam and so on. So he was right at the forefront of all that, and he encouraged me to do that. It was pretty amazing kind of a thing. So, yeah, I think we've been, we've all admired each other's work, especially in the 60s when there were so many great groups, so many great songs at that time. It was a fascinating time.
It certainly was, and it's fascinating reading about it in the book. Why was now the time for you to tell this story and really to tell us about this 55-plus years of you and the group?
Well, there's been some mischaracterizations. There's been some outright fallacies. And I thought that if somebody wants to hear from one of the Beach Boys who's been there since before the Beach Boys began, the story of a family who got together and because of the love of music, and because my cousin Brian and I got together and created some really cool songs that caught on and became very popular, it's about time to hear from me rather than just sit back and, I've always known what I have done, but I've never put it in writing. And I've actually recorded the book at my home studio in Lake Tahoe. It took 3.5 days, and I recorded it. And that was an emotional experience there, talking about my cousin Carl's last concert and his losing his battle with lung cancer, and my sister Stephanie dying from cancer, and my mom and loved ones and so on. That was rough, but I got a chance finally with the help of a great writer named Jim Hirsch, who's had New York Times best-selling books. He helped me put it in a context, and I think, against the backdrop of which is going on in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and on up to today, I was able to tell my story, and it's great. It was an emotional experience, but there's a lot of highs. I think the highs outweigh the lows, but there definitely were some problems we encountered along the way.
We have David Crosby on the show not too long ago, and he was talking about just how hard it is for that long to keep a band together. And I was thinking about that while reading your book, because you not only had the dynamics of a band and success and great success, but also family. I mean, this is a family project. So it becomes all the more hurtful, but also difficult because of that, I would assume.
Well, that is true. In fact, my Uncle Murray, Brian, Dennis, and Carl's father, my uncle, my mother's brother, was the one person in our family who understood the music business to the extent that he knew what publishing was. I didn't even know at the beginning what publishing a song meant or the value of it. And so he took advantage of that, and he cheated me. He did not credit me with California Girls and I Get Around and several, 35 songs that I had to go to court ultimately to get my authorship recognized and begin to start getting compensated for my contribution to the group. So that was not a fun thing. But on the other hand, he was an excellent promoter, and he was a grassroots type of promotion guy. So he helped get the group started and recognized early on in 1962 when he took over the management of the group. But he was only our manager for a couple of years, and it was tough because he was tough on his kids. He was tougher on his kids than he was on me, but he disenfranchised all of us and because he sold the publishing late in the 60s, and that was just really bad. So I detail that in the book and all the ins and outs of how that happened. And also, I was able to address some things that I never did say, like don't F with the formula with respect to the Pet Sounds album. I was all on board with the Pet Sounds album.
How did that come
to
be?
Beautiful tracks.
Because the story is that you said that don't F with the formula, and that's the story, and that you were against this direction of the group. So how do you think that got perpetrated and spread as widely as it did?
I have no idea, but that was said by somebody, and I take exception to that because I never said that. In fact, I named the album. I worked very hard on the album with everybody, doing the vocals and stuff and writing a couple of songs with Brian. And I took it to Capitol Records and played it for them along with my cousin Brian. So, it just was a fallacy. It was so it's good to be able to say it like it was and give the truth as I lived it. So that's what I did with this book.
What were the competing demands at that point of while you were working on that album of making of Pet Sounds? Brian had recruited Tony Asher to write lyrics. You write about the instructions that he gave and the hours of recording. Ended up being called Stalin of the studio. So even though you were for the project, it was still a difficult project.
Well, no, it was hard because there were two groups. Brian left the touring group in 1964. We continued on touring. In fact, we went to Japan early that year, and we came back from Japan. We went right in the studio in 1966 and recorded the Pet Sounds vocals. So, yeah, it was hard work, but that's okay. I mean, nobody complained about that. But there were mischaracterizations and so on. And so I was able to, clarify how it went from my point of view in Good Vibrations, my book.
So there's a point you're recording the vocals for Heroes and Villains, and Brian made you do this while lying for hours at the bottom of an empty pool. What do you make?
Well, we experimented a lot on a lot of different occasions, unique sounds. Like, for instance, the song Good Vibrations. I mean, that was a unique track with the use of a theremin. And a couple times we would lay on our backs facing up to the microphone and doing our harmonies that way, or making weird sounds and barnyard sounds and so on like that. During the making of the Smile album, which came after the Pet Sounds album. So, yeah, we did a lot of weird things and a lot of strange things, and there was a lot of drugs going around at that time, so that even exacerbated things. But you know what? It's what we did, and we, you know, went through that phase. And for instance, last year we did 172 concerts, and this year about 160, and we're still enjoying a tremendous amount of success worldwide, which is awesome.
Now, and as you tour, the last time, so the 50th anniversary tour in 2012 was the last time that you and Brian were together, right? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And you write about this in the book, but it was difficult from the very start. And as you say at the, I believe you write that by the end of it, it was just a miracle that you even got through it. Go ahead.
That is true, because there were, you know, Brian and I talked before we even worked together on an album called That's Why God Made the Radio. He and I were supposed to get together and write some songs. That was not allowed. It was disallowed. In fact, I was told by his wife, Melinda, that Brian doesn't write that way anymore. I found that pretty offensive, since I co-wrote songs with Brian that were, you know, classic hits. And so that was not good. I mean, he was controlled, and the producer of the album didn't put out the album without even me letting me hear the final results or final mixes of everything. So there were uncool things done at that time. And so at the end of the tour, we went back to how we were doing business prior to that, which is Brian has his own band, he's out working. And so do I. So, but the thing is, in Brian's new book, he even talks about, you know, and in the articles and interviews, he'll talk about he'd like to get together and write with me. So if it were just Brian and I, there wouldn't be these problems. But he's had his father, he's had Dr. Landy, and all this stuff is documented in my book and explains how tough it was to work together.
He was asked,
not because of Brian, though.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, because he was asked this week, is that a relationship, meaning with you, that you would like to, that you hope to repair? And he said, I would like to, yes. And you write basically the same thing in your book, and I think that's what I got out of it, is that if it were just the two of you in a room, you probably would be okay.
Absolutely. You know, my cousin Brian and I mean, we were so close growing up. We went to each other's high school football games. We, you know, on a senior trip to, I invited him to go with me because we could bring a friend. And so we used to sing Everly Brothers songs and go to church and sing the songs there and then walk back singing doo-wop and Everly's. So, you know, we go way, way, way back. I mean, the first recollection of Brian singing was singing Danny Boy sitting on my Grandma Wilson's lap. So, you know, we go back to childhood together, and so in writing those songs together and being in a group together, then he quit the live group because he wanted to concentrate just on the recording. And that was hard to deal with, but it was fine because he wasn't happy on the road. So, and now he is, you know, been able to go out and travel and has a great band, and he does fine with that aspect of things. But if, like I said, ultimately at the end of the day, if it was just he and I, it's a whole different ballgame, because we have our natures that complement each other, and he has his musical gifts, and I come up with the lyrics and the concepts on so many things, and that's exactly how it is when it's just us together with a piano. We've done some miraculous things together.
Having seen the 50th anniversary show and having seen him perform with you, and then having seen him perform separate from that, there seems to be quite a fragility there with him. Did you feel that on tour, and is that something that you had to compensate for in some way?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, at times, I mean, we saw him in really not the greatest shape ever, and it felt like it was almost, you know, abusive to have him out there, because at certain points in time he appeared not to want to be there. In fact, he just disconnected right on stage. But at other times he had a really great time. So it was, you know, he's had his ups and downs, and so it's hard to look at, though, when you're a lifelong friend and cousin.
And certainly hard to look at. When did you get response from the fans after the or even during the tour? Did you get response from fans of how they reacted to that and how they reacted to then you coming together and then eventually breaking up again?
Well, it was never to be forever. It was always contracted to be, first of all, 50 songs for 50 years, and then it grew to 73. But there was always contractual, and it was always by contract, I was required to go back and do what I'd been doing for ever since my cousin Carl passed away in 1998. And so there were some fallacies put out, some complete mistruths, saying, like, I fire Brian and Al. That's totally untrue. I never did that. But then they let that be out there without contradicting it. So that was hurtful, too. So, you know, it was not good. I mean, but I think from a point of view of the fans, I think a lot of people really loved seeing us back together again. And from that point of view, it was worth it.
Do you feel you played, what you said, 175 concerts in 2015, the most ever in a single year? Do you feel that when people come to see the Beach Boys, that they still are coming to see the Beach Boys, even though it is so diluted from what it originally was?
Well, I'm the lead singer and have been for 55 years, so there is that continuity there. And we have a great band. We're obsessed with recreating those songs as close to the record as humanly possible. Obviously, we don't have Carl Wilson with us. We don't have Dennis Wilson with us. And Brian does his own things. But we've been getting a lot of positive reviews every night that we do our shows. We do our favorite thing to do is evening with the Beach Boys, with 2 hours of music, with a 20-minute intermission between the 2 one-hour parts. So, and we, like I said, we've been getting tremendous positive reviews. So we're very fortunate to be able to do, as a long-lasting profession, what originally started as a family hobby.
Mike, the book is really fun and amazing to read, and you tell great stories and very honest stories. I thank you so much for coming on this morning and sharing them with us, and I wish you all the luck in the world with the book and future projects as well. A great
thank
pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being on
all
the
right,
program.
Right.
Mike Love is the author of Good Vibrations, My Life as a Beach Boy. It's published by Blue Rider Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.